Hello, and welcome to another installment of Adam Reads. My name is Adam Reynolds, lead non-technical auditor here at Infotex, and today I'll be reading parts of the new, well, not so new now, bulletin titled Third-Party Relationships, Interagency Guidance on Risk Management. I'll also be discussing some areas in the guidance that you may want to consider adding or expanding on in your third-party risk management program, or vendor management program, as we call it, though we are slowly moving towards calling it TPRM, or third-party risk management ourselves instead of vendor management. But, as stated, the guidance I'm talking about now is OCC Bulletin 2023-17, Third-Party Relationships, Interagency Guidance on Risk Management, published back on June 6, 2023. It rescinds the previous guidance documents from the OCC, Bulletin 2013-29, Third-Party Relationships, Risk Management Guidance, and Bulletin 2020-10, Third-Party Relationships, Frequently Asked Questions to Supplement OCC Bulletin 2013-29. Both of those two previous items were released solely by the OCC. But with this year's bulletin, it's coming not only from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, but also the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. So, that's our first real change to the guidance, the fact we're now including two additional agencies, the Fed and the FDIC, so this is now a multi-agency effort. And don't hold me to this, I haven't read the whole bulletin in its entirety, but I have gone through it multiple times, read what people have been saying, talked to people as well, and while there are definitely changes to the guidance, as a whole, especially for smaller, community-based banks, the guidance is in line with previous publications. There isn't anything particularly new. Fintech and banking as a service is discussed, but we don't see those being something that impact smaller community-based banks at this time. So for this reading, I want to draw your attention to a number of passages in the bulletin, really either to reinforce the fact that the basics of TPRM have stayed the same, or to point out areas that may need additional consideration in your program to address this bulletin. An example of the first kind of item, we have a note for community banks in the bulletin announcement stating that this guidance applies to all banks with third-party relationships. So that hasn't changed. If you use third parties, and I can't think of a bank that doesn't, this applies to you. You need to manage the risks that arise from those activities. This is a fact in 2023. And then let me mention the highlights of this bulletin, as stated in its announcement, as it gives a good overview. The final interagency guidance promotes consistency in the agency's supervisory approach to third-party risk management. Again, this is now a multi-agency guidance instead of just the OCC. It outlines the third-party risk management lifecycle and identifies risk management principles applicable to each stage of the lifecycle. This is the heart of the guidance, where it discusses the lifecycle, including planning, due diligence and third-party selection, contract negotiation, ongoing monitoring, and termination. The lifecycle from start to finish. And I won't be going into detail in all of these steps, but there were some interesting updates to some of the sections, particularly contract negotiations. The bulletin clarifies that not all third-party relationships present the same level of risk or criticality to a bank's operations. This isn't new either. The fact that lower-risk third parties don't require the same scrutiny as high-risk third parties makes sense. We still do have to identify all of our third parties and assess their risk, but the amount of work after that is based on the risk posed by that third party. Not all vendors represent equal risk. And it describes sound risk management principles to consider when developing and implementing third-party risk management practices, commensurate with the bank's risk profile and complexity, as well as the criticality of the activity supported by the third party. The third-party relationship lifecycle and governance sections of the guidance provide the details of sound risk management principles to consider when addressing these risks. So, let me speak a little to those last few parts. Commensurate with the bank's risk profile and complexity, as well as the criticality of the activity supported by the third party. That is echoed throughout the bulletin. Your TPRM program needs to be based on your risk profile, which of course is a good thing. We don't typically like one-size-fits-all regulations. That is, there are things a large, multinational bank needs to have in place that wouldn't make sense for a smaller community-based bank. So we like to see that. The guidance understands that not all banks are equal, and that guidance should be based on a particular institution's risk. And then, criticality of the activity supported by the third party. We need to know who all our third parties are, of course, but we don't need to review the financial statements of the landscaping company that cuts the grass once a week or however often. You know, worst case, the landscaping company has bad money management practices and goes under, forcing us to find another company and perhaps having taller than average grass for a little bit. Not the biggest risk a bank faces. The core, though, that's a necessity. Our core provider, we do want to review their financials. Not the greatest of examples, because it can be hard to get financial statements for large companies sometimes, but the idea is the more reliant we are for a service, the more risk that service poses. That is what drives risk management principles needed for a particular third party, which makes sense. So then let me get into the bulletin itself. There are five high-level sections: overview, risk management, third-party relationship lifecycle, governance, and supervisory review of third-party relationships. I've already provided a brief overview, so we will be skipping that first section, the overview. Risk management, as already discussed, risk management is based on the institution and third party. From the guidance, as part of sound risk management, a banking organization analyzes the risks associated with each third-party relationship and tailors risk management practices commensurate with the banking organization's size, complexity, and risk profile, and with the nature of the third-party relationship. Maintaining a complete inventory of its third-party relationships and periodically conducting risk assessments for each third-party relationship supports a banking organization's determination of whether risks have changed over time and to update risk management practices accordingly. As part of sound risk management, banking organizations engage in more comprehensive and rigorous oversight and management of third-party relationships that support higher risk activities, including critical activities. Characteristics of critical activities may include those activities that could cause a banking organization to face significant risk if the third party fails to meet expectations, have significant customer impacts, or have a high significant impact on a banking organization's financial condition or operations. It is up to each banking organization to identify its critical activities and third-party relationships that support those critical activities. Notably, an activity that is critical for one banking organization may not be critical for another. Some banking organizations may assign a criticality or risk level to each third-party relationship, whereas others identify critical activities and those third parties that support such activities. Regardless of a banking organization's approach, a key element of effective risk management is applying a sound methodology to designate which activities and third-party relationships receive more comprehensive oversight. So, all of that is, again, a long way of saying inventory all of your third parties, perform a risk analysis on all of them, high risk or higher criticality, more comprehensive oversight, with the most oversight of critical third parties. Now we're moving on into third-party relationship lifecycle. Effective third-party risk management generally follows a continuous lifecycle for third-party relationships. The stages of the risk management lifecycle of third-party relationships are planning, due diligence and third-party selection, contract negotiation, ongoing monitoring, and finally, termination. The degree to which the examples of considerations discussed in this guidance are relevant to each banking organization is based on specific facts and circumstances, and these examples may not apply to all the banking organization's third-party relationships. It is important to involve staff with the requisite knowledge and skills in each stage of the risk management lifecycle. A banking organization may involve experts across disciplines, such as compliance, risk, or technology, as well as legal counsel, and may engage in external support when helpful to supplement the qualifications and technical expertise of in-house staff. The first step in the life cycle is planning. As part of sound risk management, effective planning allows a banking organization to evaluate and consider how to manage risks before entering into a third-party relationship. Certain third parties, such as those that support a banking organization's higher risk activities, including critical activities, typically warrant a greater degree of planning and consideration. For example, when critical activities are involved, plans may be presented to and approved by a banking organization's board of directors or designated board committee. Depending on the degree of risk and complexity of the third-party relationship, a banking organization typically considers many factors in planning. The guidance speaks to many of these factors and includes such items such as understanding the strategic purpose of the business arrangement, identifying and assessing the benefits and the risks associated with the business arrangement, considering the nature of the business arrangement, such as volume of activity, use of subcontractors, and technology needed. Those were just a few of the considerations in the guidance, and please refer to that guidance for further items and details. The second step in the life cycle is due diligence and third-party selection. Conducting due diligence on third parties before selecting and entering into third-party relationships is an important part of sound risk management. It provides management with the information needed about potential third parties to determine if a relationship would help achieve a banking organization's strategic and financial goals. The due diligence process also provides the banking organization with the information needed to evaluate whether it can appropriately identify, monitor, and control risks associated with the particular third-party relationship. Due diligence includes assessing the third party's ability to perform the activity as expected, adhere to a banking organization's policies related to the activity, comply with all applicable laws and regulations, and conduct the activity in a safe and sound manner. Relying solely on experience with or prior knowledge of a third party is not an adequate proxy for performing appropriate due diligence, as due diligence should always be tailored to the specific activity to be performed by the third party. Depending on the degree of risk and complexity of the third party relationship, a banking organization typically considers the following factors, among others, as part of due diligence: strategies and goals, legal and regulatory compliance, financial condition, business experience, qualifications of backgrounds of key personnel and other human resource considerations, risk management, information security, management of information systems, operational resilience, incident reporting and management processes, physical security, reliance on subcontractors, insurance coverage, and contractual arrangements with other parties. For details on the particulars for these items, please refer to the guidance. Which gets us into the third step in the cycle, contract negotiations. When evaluating whether to enter into a relationship with a third party, a banking organization typically determines whether a written contract is needed, and if the proposed contract can meet the banking organization's business goals and risk management needs. After such determination, a banking organization typically negotiates contract provisions that will facilitate effective risk management and oversight and specify the expectations and obligations of both the banking organization and the third party. A banking organization may tailor the level of detail and comprehensiveness of such contract provisions based on the risk and complexity posed by the particular third-party relationship. Depending on the degree of risk and complexity of the third-party relationship, a banking organization typically considers the following factors, among others, during contract negotiations: nature and scope of arrangement, performance measures or benchmarks, responsibilities for providing, receiving, and retaining information, the right to audit and require remediation, responsibility for compliance with applicable laws and regulations, costs and compensation, ownership and license, confidentiality and integrity, operational resilience and business continuity, indemnification and limits on liability, insurance, dispute resolution, customer complaints, subcontracting, foreign-based third parties, default and termination, and regulatory supervision. So those are items to consider in the third phase, contract negotiations. Whether a contract is warranted or not, most likely so, and then tailoring the contract, based on risk, to address such items as just listed. The next section is ongoing monitoring. Once we've entered into a relationship with the third party, we now need to monitor that relationship. Ongoing monitoring enables a banking organization to 1. Confirm the quality and sustainability of a third party's controls and ability to meet contractual obligations. 2. Escalate significant issues or concerns, such as material or repeat audit findings, deterioration in financial condition, security breaches, data loss, service interruptions, compliance lapses, or other indicators of increased risk. And 3. Respond to such significant issues or concerns when identified. Typical monitoring activities include review of reports regarding the third party's performance and effectiveness of its controls, periodic visits and meetings with third-party representatives to discuss performance and operational issues, and regular testing of the banking organization's controls that manage risk from its third-party relationships, particularly when supporting higher-risk activities, including critical activities. In certain circumstances, based on risk, a banking organization may also perform direct testing of the third party's own controls. To gain efficiencies or leverage specialized expertise, banking organizations may engage external resources, refer to conformity assessments or certifications, or collaborate when performing ongoing monitoring. To support effective monitoring, a banking organization dedicates sufficient staffing with the necessary expertise, authority, and accountability to perform a range of ongoing monitoring activities, such as those described. Depending on the degree of risk and complexity of the third-party relationship, a banking organization will consider many factors as part of ongoing monitoring. These are detailed in the guidance, but include such things as the overall effectiveness of the third-party relationship, changes to the third party's business strategy and its agreements with other entities, changes in third-party financial condition, and changes to or lapses in the third party's insurance coverage, just to name a few. Which then moves us into the final stage of the life cycle, termination. A banking organization may terminate a relationship for various reasons, such as expiration or breach of the contract, the third party's failure to comply with applicable laws or regulations, or a desire to seek an alternative third party, bring the activity in-house, or discontinue the activity altogether. When this occurs, it is important for management to terminate relationships in an effective manner, whether the activities are transitioned to another third party, brought in-house, or discontinued. Depending on the degree of risk and complexity of the third party relationship, a banking organization typically considers the following factors, among others, to facilitate termination. Options for an effective transition of services, such as potential alternate third parties to perform the activity. Relevant capabilities, resources, and the time frame required to transition the activity to another third party or bring in-house while still managing legal, regulatory, customer, and other impacts that might arise. Costs and fees associated with termination, managing risks associated with data retention and destruction, information system connections and access control, or other control concerns that require additional risk management and monitoring after the end of the third-party relationship, handling of joint intellectual property, and managing risks to the banking organization, including any impact on customers, if the termination happens as a result of the third party's inability to meet expectations. So that was the last item in the life cycle. Of course, it is a cycle and risk always needs reassessed, but termination is a very important part of that cycle, and we must be defining that process, addressing the items as listed before. After speaking to the third-party relationship life cycle, the guidance then speaks to governance of third-party relationships. There are a variety of ways for banking organizations to structure their third-party risk management processes. Some banking organizations disperse accountability for their third-party risk management processes among their business lines. Other banking organizations may centralize the processes under their compliance, information security, procurement, or risk management functions. Regardless of how a banking organization structures its process, the following practices are typically considered throughout the third-party risk management lifecycle, again commensurate with risk and complexity. Oversight and accountability. Proper oversight and accountability are important aspects of third-party risk management because they help enable a banking organization to minimize adverse financial, operational, or other consequences. A banking organization's board of directors has ultimate responsibility for providing oversight for third-party risk management and holding management accountable. The board also provides clear guidance regarding acceptable risk appetite, approves appropriate policies, and ensures that appropriate procedures and practices have been established. A banking organization's management is responsible for developing and implementing third-party risk management policies, procedures, and practices commensurate with the banking organization's risk appetite and the level of risk and complexity of its third-party relationships. Independent review. It is important for a banking organization to conduct periodic independent reviews to assess the adequacy of its third-party risk management processes. The guidance provides typical consideration factors to address independent reviews. Documentation and reporting. It is also important that a banking organization properly document and report on its third-party risk management process and specify third-party relationships throughout the lifecycle. Documentation and reporting, key elements that assist those within or outside the banking organization who conduct control activities, will vary among banking organizations depending on the risk and complexity of their third-party relationships. The guidance provides examples of processes that support effective documentation and internal reporting that the agencies have observed. Examples of processes that support effective documentation and internal reporting that the agencies have observed include, but are not limited to, a current inventory of all third-party relationships, planning and risk assessments related to the use of third parties, due diligence results and recommendations, executed contracts, remediation plans and related reports addressing the quality and sustainability of the third party's controls, risk and performance reports required and received from the third party as part of ongoing monitoring, if applicable, reports related to customer complaint and inquiry monitoring, and any subsequent remediation reports, reports from third parties of service disruptions, security breaches, or other relevant events that pose or may pose a material risk to the banking organization, results of independent reviews, and periodic reporting to the board, including, as applicable, dependency on a single provider for multiple activities. And then finally, the last section of the guidance, supervisory reviews of third-party relationships. This guidance has a bullet-pointed list of common activities commonly conducted by examiners when reviewing third-party risk management. Assess the ability of the banking organization's management to oversee and manage the banking organization's third parties. Assess the impact of third-party relationships on the banking organization's risk profile and key aspects of financial and operational performance, including compliance with applicable laws and regulations. Perform transaction testing or review results of testing to evaluate the activities performed by the third party and assess compliance with applicable laws and regulations. Highlight and discuss any material risks and deficiencies in the banking organization's risk management process with senior management and the board of directors as appropriate. Review the banking organization's plans for appropriate and sustainable remediation of any deficiencies, particularly those associated with the oversight of third parties that involve critical activities, and consider supervisory findings when assigning the components of the applicable rating system, and highlight any material risks and deficiencies in the report of examination. So that's it. We're through the guidance. Overall, not much has changed. If you're using third parties, this bulletin applies to you. The guidance makes it abundantly clear that, regardless of outsourced activities, the onus is on the bank to ensure the third parties meet the requirements that would be expected if the bank performed the same services in-house. So, inventory all of your vendors. Assess their risk. Perform every stage of the life cycle for each vendor, but the requirements of each stage will be based on the risk that vendor poses. But review the guidance, especially the bullet points for each stage, to ensure your reviews are covering what is expected. Everything is based on risk. If you're adequately inventorying, risk ranking, and performing all of the stages of the life cycle on your third parties, that will help minimize any risk posed by them. Of course, there is always risk, but we want to minimize it, control it, and be aware of it. And this guidance speaks to that for third parties. Well, that's all for today. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next installment of Adam Reads.